Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast shared on accessmedia.nz with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Good afternoon and welcome to Well Well Well. Awesome to be back in the seat after having a few months off, and even more excitedly so because we have a wonderful guest on here today. First of all, just a wee reminder what Well 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 is all about, where each well represents a thing, where the first well represents how we look after each other, a couple of wells how we look after each other, and all three wells representing what's out there in the community to support us. And I'm here today with someone who covers all those bases. And to know if this show is relevant for you today, I'm sure it is, because if you've ever been struggling with a bit of change, or there's something you want to change in your life, whether it's a bit about your direction, your purpose, maybe it's your career, your family, relationships, your health, or even just general life transitions, today's the show it's all about. So with much respect and admiration, I'd like to introduce Marie McManaway from Life For You Life Coaching. Welcome aboard, Marie.
Thank you, Mike. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, I'm sure we'll have a great time. And what I'm even more excited for is out for the audience there, who I'm sure will also get a whole pile of really useful tips on they can apply to their lifestyles. We are in some challenging times at the moment.
Absolutely.
So if you're finding yourself at a bit of a crossroads, you're learning for some clarity, a bit of direction, or merely seeking ways to conquer your challenges, today's the day we're going to find all out about that. So let's go over to Marie and sort of look a bit through your bio. So you're the CEO and founder of Life For You Coaching, and I think you've been coaching for about 18 years. Is that about right?
That is correct. Yeah, it's quite some time ago now. It's really interesting. When I first started out, I sort of wander along with it and see how it went, because back in those days, it was a little bit woo-woo-ish to have a coach of any description, really, other than on the sports field. So I was kind of breaking new ground at that stage in the wider APRA, at least. And I got a lot of people saying, oh, that, you know, that's not going to work around here. However, unfortunately for them, unfortunately for me, it has not been the case.
Oh, I am fortunate for the many, many clients you've also worked with. Yeah. So you've got some gold certification in life coaching. You've had the basic counselling qualification. You've also worked on Lifeline, the rape crisis training, and even the rail accident support.
Yes. Yeah.
I imagine they've been a really good basis for where you've got to now.
Absolutely. I mean, we're all beginners at some point in our life, and it doesn't matter what age you are. You know, it never feel like you're not able to learn something new. And for me, I didn't do that great at college, but at dropping out by the time I was 15, so to speak. But when I got into sort of around that late 20s, early 30s, I really actually was drawn to learning and upskilling and expanding myself, and it's been a great ride, and it still is. I'm still learning today. Training in hypnosis is a more recent one as well. Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. But I even think it's really relevant to youth of today. I mean, I think they look at more traditional, being educated towards more traditional roles, and this is how life is. But as you said, you broke a bit of ice in many respects with the life coaching. There isn't that national body for affiliation and therefore regulation, and people may look sort of frown upon that. But with the way the world is opening up, that people can pretty much be whoever they are, and there's a potential to make income. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, there is. If you have something that you're really, really passionate about, that you really want to do, you'll find a way to do it. And it might feel like you're up against the mountain initially, but if you take those small molehill steps along, you will get there. So always have a little bit of faith and trust in yourself and think, you know what, I'm just going to give it a go. And I was talking with a guy recently, and he was about to move overseas and give up his role. And he said, gee, I'm really worried because I'm going over there with no real career future in my, you know, forte sort of thing. And what I said to him was, consider trying new alternate careers and new options, almost as if you're trying on a pair of shoes. You know, you might have the same pair that you always wear, and then you go into into the store and think, you know what, I'm going to check this out. I'm going to walk around in these for a while and see if that's my fit. And it's the same with finding your career. You've really got to spend some time test running it for a while almost. So don't dismay if the first fit doesn't work for you. There are other techniques and other ways to do it.
And you'd be the exact person to help to make sure that shoe fits perfectly, is that correct?
Correct. That is part of my job, Mike. I've got, my job is to narrow down what you are specifically good at, what you would like to do, and then how you'd like to get there.
Because I think it's one of the, if I look back on my own schooling, and I even think now, is we often don't have people to provide that guidance for us, and we have to make up our own decisions. So, you know, to have someone who can reinforce your beliefs and help clarify them and help you point out, well, what your next steps are is going to increase your chance of success.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, I know, and back many years ago, Steve Jobs, the guy that invented the Apple computer, most people would know that. But when he was asked to do a success speech on what it took to be a success in life, and he went back to his college to do it. And while he was there, he said, look for the clues. And what he meant was look for the clues behind you, and they can often be part of your guidance. An example for Steve being that when he was at college, he had a huge attraction to doing calligraphy, studying the letters, and being a guy and doing calligraphy, he got a wee bit of flack for that from his mates. But as it turned out, that became a very big clue in what he was going to do with his future life when he invented the computer in his garage. So,
is that where all the different fonts come from?
Yeah. I mean, that's part of it. So, yeah. And I really liked that because I think for younger people, it is easy to think, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. And then you spin round and round in a circle. But it's less about asking yourself, what am I going to do? It's what do I love to do first? And start from that angle before you make that great leap. Yeah.
And sometimes I guess we can look back and life might have thrown us a few curveballs, but they can also have been those learning incidences which can be an actual building block for a new direction. Is that, you might have experienced that with some of your clients?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I always knew that I liked helping people. That even as a little girl, I can remember preschool even lining my teddies or dolls up in a row on the bed and chatting to them about how to be a good teddy and things like that. So that was a big clue for me. Obviously, I didn't know that at the time. And it took me a long time to find what I was going to be. I spent some time, I thought I was going to be a nurse for a while, looked at that, and then I looked into counselling as well before I came into coaching. And I think for me, the big thing for me was that I wanted to give people tools and techniques that would help them manage their life on their own without when troubles or challenges come along, because it's one thing to be able to get over it, but it's another thing to actually have the right tool set to be able to get over it in a calmer way and to feel less guilty or less sabotaging or less berating of yourself in the process.
Which kind of brings me on to a question which I know is further down the line, and if we talk about the talking therapies, you mentioned counselling, you mentioned life coaching, and if I reflect a bit on my own journey when I came to see you, I'd been through 2 years through the normal system of meeting the doctor and things like this and on to counsellors and rah, rah, rah. And what I found is they kept drawing back on my past and my story, and it was keep creating that as if it became a narrative. And I remember after about the second session I had with you, I actually broke into a smile on the way home, because all of a sudden you talk about that light at the end of the tunnel, and I hadn't had those previous conversations yet with you. It started with there's a line in the sand and we're going to look forward. And I guess for me that was a real turning point in engaging with how I'm going to move forward. It's I can't change that past. I can look forward towards the future. Here's some steps I can take, and little steps heading in your direction is going to be helpful. Mm-hmm. So take away from what I've just said, how would you differentiate between counselling and life coaching?
I think they're both needed in the community, or, you know, both are very, very important, because a hugely traumatic event does require you know, some really big discussion and time, talk time with a counsellor. What I have trained in alongside being a coach, and I call it personal development coach, because that's what I specialise in, is also in ways to heal past experiences. Now, when I say heal, nobody can erase the past entirely, but if you imagine that, like, you go to the movies and it's surround sound and bright colours, and, you know, you can even get the seats vibrating or 3D, it's amazing. And then if you look back or look into the old Charlie Chaplin movie, it's black and white. There's no sound, and it's just playing through. So the healing technique I use takes away all the big noise, all the big sound, all the colour, and it makes it small, and it brings it into a black and white memory. So the memory loses the emotional attachment, becomes, yes, it happened, yes, it's there, but I am no longer attaching to it, meaning that then I have the strength and ability to walk beyond it. And also looking into that, you know, it's really interesting. I did some studies on your hippocampus. I don't know if you've heard of that.
I have. It's it's up in the brain.
Yes, yeah. Funny little thing. Mm. Now, my question when I started researching was, why can some people recover quicker or easier than others from traumatic past events? And just like the size of, if you're born with a big nose or a small one, you can be born with a big hippocampus or a small one. And the smaller your hippocampus, the more you are likely to be cyclical in that it's very hard to break out of it. And that meaning the traumatic event. And so then my next research was around, can we expand the hippocampus? You know, can we be better at recovering? And the short answer is yes, you can. And then there's many techniques that will actually help you with that. So if somebody was to come to me with a dramatic traumatic event, because we all have a different understanding of what is a big event and what isn't, you know, it's often about working on all aspects of that to help them through that journey.
For sure. Yeah. And I guess, too, a lot of it is that skill of where you're directing your attention and energy. And if you're focusing on that past, you're going to remain there, as opposed to put your fresh energy and thoughts towards what you're building to the future. So a bit like a seesaw, you can, one end is up and one is down, and you have a bit of say and control. Is that part of your hippocampus?
Yeah, well, absolutely. And it's just about learning to tell a new story. You know, if something happened, it's happened, right?
Mm.
We cannot take away the event. We can only take away the impact of that event. And therein lies the power for anybody who chooses or seeks to go beyond their current conditions. I mean, we're born with 12 senses, not just 5. And one of those 6 senses are an internal sense, and that is imagination and creativity. We can build a better future, a better story, just by starting with imagination. What would your future be like if you changed that story? Rather than holding on to, this happened, therefore I'm stuck, once we've recovered it, then it's okay. Imagine if that wasn't there, what would it look like? You know, and that opens those doors of possibility. And that's when a client, what I always say, I see a client's lights turn back on. You know, it can take 3 or even 4 sessions in your case too. So, you know, go me, go
that's
you.
That's been good, yeah.
and it's at that time when I see them come in, and all of a sudden they're almost telling me what's going on. And I'm just like, thank you to you, you know, yep. Well done, client, for being so open, ready and willing to change.
It's a bit like if I travel the same way to work each day, it's just going to be the same, same, same. If I finally take a different way and, hey, I'm going to see things differently, and same with those neural pathways. And I think that's probably one of your key attributes, isn't it, is that you're getting people onto these new neural pathways to see things in a different way. The fact you talk about there's 10 senses instead of 5, because I think there's other things like intuition and your gut feeling, those sorts of things as well.
Memory, perceptivity,
yeah.
You know, the ability to call on those, and they are the ones that sit in our emotional quotient and our internal self and our subconscious self. We've got the external ones that we all know, you know, sight, sound, taste, touch, smell. And they're the logical ones that we do almost by default. You know, you don't really have to think about them, but it's those six internal, senses that actually form the basis of your beliefs. So what's happened in your memory may impinge on your belief and form a limiting belief. And that's where the wheels of life get wobbly.
Well, as you say, because we are conditioned with those beliefs as well, and in terms of the senses there, for everyone go, hey, that we presume that is how it is. And yet you break down a lot of those barriers, and a lot of the things you say, I'm going, gosh, that should be common sense. It's just not common yet. And it was so common. and I think that was one of the really cool things, was opening up to different ways of thinking rather than the way I'd been conditioned in terms of my upbringing, the culture of who I am, the education, the religion, the friendship groups and things like that, that they're all the things that kind of really shape you. And until you spend some time and learn some other different things, there's a very good potential that your perspective on life will change, and the lenses we're seeing through will turn out a picture quite different.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not always easy. You know, the road to change can be quite a challenge for people and some clients. It's really what I have really noticed when I first started was it was quite a female-based clientele. And then about halfway, you know, about year 10, I started seeing that change. And that really enticed me to keep going, and that was, you know, to encourage more males to come forward. And so now my ratio, I mean, at the moment I've got more male clients than female clients, you know, and that happens on a regular now, and I really like that about that. The interesting part is when I'm coaching with clients, or we are coaching, because I always say I'm walking with you through this journey. That's how I perceive it. You know, I'm walking beside my client all the way, and I never have too many clients, you know, because each client is such an individualized package that I have to put together for them. There is no templating. I can't one size fits all, because like I talked about before, you finding your match career is the same as me finding what matches your personality, the way your brain is making decisions, the functionality, all of it, the self-taught, everything comes into play. So it has to be specifically created for that individual.
I think it's really good you highlight the males more engaging with that, because certainly as I looked up, as I felt it wasn't really an avenue you had to harden up. You need to be able to deal with yourself. And I think that's where it leads to things like poor mental health, or, you know, even I look at things like, say, the joining the gangs, the criminality, the addictions and things like that, that lack of emotional regulation, or being able to understand how you're feeling, then gets redirected into other areas which may be less productive and healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when life gets bumpy or the wheels fall off, the first thing we say is, I don't know who I am anymore. You know, like we've lost identity straight away, you know, and then we are, I don't know where I'm going. I don't know who I am. You know, I don't know what I want. And so my first role as a coach is to actually form the basis of who that individual client is. And I do that through many different functions that we do together. And then once we've done that, I can then say, this is who you are. You don't have to defend yourself, question yourself. You just stand in your mana, your feet on the ground, and this is who you are. Now we go with, how did I get here? You know, what do I want? And so we follow on from there. But even that first few sessions of then knowing who you are is so empowering. You know, it changes people in such a way. It's wonderful.
That who I am, I can still remember those books with those little kids on, I think they would sort of go around and ask all these different animals, are you my dad, and those sorts of things. But who am I? We were having this sweet conversation earlier, and you were suggesting that it's even more difficult for some of today's youth to understand who that is because of the influence of social media and everything else which is coming directly into them. Would you like to make a quick comment on that?
Yeah, I'm certainly, because devices are everywhere. We're in front of them all the time, and they have almost become this extension of our outer self. And what is unfortunate is that many who are using their devices use them as a form of identity, and therefore they're relying on technology to identify who that soul of that person is. And many of my clients that come in when they're younger, and I say, you know, I usually ask, you know, who are you and who would you like to be? And they say, I don't know, you know, and that they literally have no idea. And their key focus is about how cool they look or, you know, what media thinks they should be. And so losing your soul, you know, and it's not just about, it's not so much a, it is a spirituality in that and a soul in that. And I'm not talking about going to church. I'm talking about, you know, who's this person inside, this beautiful core, this innate individual beacon? Who's that person, you know? And when you can connect to that person, that's when your confidence, that's when your light is really strong.
But it's also something we're not brought up to learn or understand or delve into deeper, are we? So that would be quite a foreign sort of subject or topic for many of who the hell am I? They're trying to pick all these pieces from out around the world to make a patchwork of who they think they are.
Yeah, and it's confusing as heck because, gosh, you know, not that I want to sound 110, but when I was growing up, you know, it was enough just to decide what kind, what pair of jeans you were going to go for. Is it going to be a Levi? Is it going to be an AMCO? Like, that was a big enough decision. So now, being so overexposed to all of these different profiles and genres of how you can be, you know, it's very confusing. And but it still comes back to the basic fundamentals, which is what we were talking about, dialing back enough to actually know who that individual self is first, and then going out and sampling and trialing life from that way.
Because certainly youth brain has been asked to process more and more information as a result of technology, isn't it? And as you say, it must be overwhelming to make decisions because it's really important at that age to feel like you fit in, you are accepted, you have friends, and you're going to make those actions, whatever, to try and fit in. And I think this is where some of those TikTok challenges and things like that are, oh, hey, I've got to do that to look like I'm cool. I can look in some of my years of doing things that for that exact same reason. So a lot of influence is going out. It's hard to be different and say, well, this is who I am.
But it really is about being your own influence. It's about influencing yourself. It's about being your own hero before you can be anybody else's. If you haven't got your basic foundations of who you are, you're going to fall over as soon, even if you did get media hype, even if you did get a big following, because the pressure of it would do you in. You know, you won't be strong enough and confident enough in yourself to manage it. It would fall down, you know. So you have to be strong in who you are and celebrate yourself.
So I'm kind of hearing from that maybe a couple of key things are is, A, you've got a bit of that direction of where you're heading, but then also having boundaries to maintain there. Because I remember recently reading a story about social media influence who started off by eating things and he got all these likes and then it got bigger and bigger and so did he. And so he actually became this whole new person, became quite obese and a lot of health issues because he was doing all these big eating challenges. And so he actually lost his own identity to the fact that his identity became what his audience wanted. And it was quite an interesting story around that. So I think we also have to be careful that this is where the boundaries are of who we are and how we're going about it. Now, we're well off track.
Okay.
after about a couple of questions, but that's all cool because I didn't even get on to that. I think you've done another couple of other amazing things. Like, is it doing a marriage celebrant or something?
I did qualify, or not that you qualify, you just go online and, you know, I have done a few weddings, yes. But I haven't renewed it at the moment, but it's not a difficult thing to do.
And then the other thing I know, really important thing, is you've also been involved in that palliative care, and you had a lot of work done at the in the medical wards at Marston Hospital, upgrading some of those. And what's sort of your inspiration behind that?
Yeah, well, I had a parent dying of, I would say, I mean, you know, natural causes, really. I mean, this my mother was in her 90s, so I consider that a pretty cool gift.
Absolutely.
To live to that late age. But as she was dying, the family wanted to wrap around her, and so we stayed over 24/7. And I had the experience of sleeping on the hospital floor. It's very hard. And while I was there, I also thought, my goodness, this room is, I know Mum's dying, but this is a dreary place to pass over. And so, you know, my mum passed, and obviously I took the idea away with me and spent a bit of time just processing Mum's passing. But then I thought, you know, we can do something about this. This isn't that tricky. And what I really appreciated was there were some amazing people in the wider APA, again, community spirit, who wrapped around and supported this idea. And what was going to be one room painted and made, you know, a sort of, you know, for people that are passing over or very, very poorly, actually turned into three rooms, and it was incredible. You know, they got painted out, Kurt Mendes, you know, the best blokes, and we had people like Pete Nicolaisen providing these amazing canvases for the walls. You know, Newbolds provided some of the music systems. We have each room got a TV. You know, we had some amazing companies. You know, one company was making blinds, you know, bedspreads. Briscoe's did a lot of work, right down to things like Lavender Abbey were doing, you know, creams to massage your partner with. But also places like Mitre 10, because then I also compiled a, you know, if you have to stay over with a parent and it's short notice, there's things you might need, you know, like a comb or a toothbrush and things like that. So there's also a cupboard for that specifically put aside. And alongside that, we also did Brian's Furniture donated. Well, he sold three Lazy Boys at cost, and we did a fundraiser for those as well. But it was just incredible. And there's a lot of others who got involved who apologise if they haven't mentioned you. But it was amazing, and I loved the community spirit. And we got to make the sign factory made a beautiful big sign with sort of out of flower petals with all the different people who contributed. And I had Kudsi, her name is, was the manager and of Ward 10 where this is. I met with her not long afterwards, and I said, oh, how's it all going? And she said, well, I've got a huge problem, Marie. And I thought, oh, my gosh, what have I done? And as it turned out, she said, the trouble is the rooms are so lovely that a few people don't want to leave when they're able to go home. So I thought, oh, that was a great compliment. Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's you seem very comfortable at that time when people do pass over, and I also understand you use that as a bit of a motivational thing, as you're only here for a limited time. So how do you sort of incorporate that into your coaching to get people to rattle their dags and get on with the job?
Well, there are some clients who actually get a, I call it a coaching session with a lasting impression. I've even taken clients who just seem to miss the significance of what a gift life is. You know, we're freaking amazing place where we live in the Wairarapa in New Zealand. We live in a beautiful place, and we don't get to choose when we're going to die. We only get to choose how we're going to live. And so often I'll take clients up to the local cemetery where I have family, and as you know, Pete. And
been there, had that trip, yes.
Been there, done that, had that experience. And I'll stand there and show them and say, well, here's a sister-in-law passing at 28. Here's a mum-in-law, you know, killed train versus car. And then here's a chap, you know, passing over naturally. Now, none of them got to choose their death, you know, but they are reminders of why life is so, so important. And I'm a huge advocate for living life in the way that you want to.
Mm.
Yeah.
And sometimes we need to put it in that context because we do take things for granted. Now, keep moving forward. And the other thing is you've also been a bit of an author, even a columnist there, and you've got a couple of books like The Mind Mechanic, Getting the Green Light in Life, The Mind Fit Farmer. I think you also contributed to The Power of Transformation and Reinventing Your Life, which was a multi-author sort of self-help book for females. You're writing
research, Mike.
Oh,
10 points.
Yeah, well, it's all there to be seen, and obviously we can talk about your websites and your online courses as well. But I mean, I think it's the whole thing is you provide that whole multimedia for people in terms to engage. So there's a way for different people's learning styles or how they might approach or how that what they feel comfortable with. So, what's your inspiration behind writing? Does that come easy or?
I love the written word. I wouldn't say I'm even great at it, for that matter, and often I make a lot of punctuation mistakes, but I call that being human, right? And, you know, I know that AI technology is in there, and even if I'm blogging on my website and it'll say, would you like me to rewrite it? And every time I go, no, because I'm quite happy to be human and have those mistakes in there. But, yeah, the opportunity to write books was a real privilege. And they're great coffee table tools. That's how I see them. They're not big, fat books. They're quick reads, and you can just pick it up anywhere, take something out of it, and then put it back down. And I think that's what I see it for. I mean, and the fact that it's only $20, you know, whereas coming to see me face-to-face now is more expensive, you know, as I've got older, you know, the price and life's changed. But that was why I then, I think it was last year I did that, compiled an online 6-week course, which is all, you know, video, my mug and all the videos, you know, there's lots of support, lots of interaction, and it's $39. So I tried to understand that everybody has a different budget.
Mm.
Not everybody can afford to come in for face-to-face. So there are other medias to do that. And then also I've been doing a little bit where I go into people's businesses and just do a bit of face-to-face coaching with a group of people as well. That's quite fun too. Yeah.
And you've done a bit of motivational speaking as well, or you've
yes, I have.
Particular events?
Yeah. I'm naturally an introvert, and so I've got so much to say, but you know, sometimes it's hard for me to get as big as an extrovert can be to deliver, but I'm learning, right? I look at all this. I'm trying to get my gestures in. I'm trying to do it.
Yeah. But I think it really comes forward is just your passion and your knowledge, and that's why you come over with such this effervescence of energy and enthusiasm. So, yeah, well, we're going to cut and have a wee music break because we need to reconfigure where we are. We've got about a million things to get through, and we've only covered two of them. So this is always one of my favourites, and it's the Mowglis with I'm Good.
Sounds good.
Oops.
From space. love revolution. Found a way to be a better person. If we come together like we should, we could all be good.
The Mowglis with I'm Good, and I'm good, and it's even better having Marie here. She's good as well. So, yeah, we've got Marie, life coach and CEO and founder of Life For You Coaching. So what was your inspiration behind creating that? Because I hear it's a bit more than just you now.
It is a bit more than just me. Again, like I mentioned in the first half of this interview, was that finding your ultimate match is really important. And so what I wanted to do was provide a platform where you could go onto my website and actually have a look through at other options that are available. An example being there's a business coach on there, Chris, and he's brilliant. That's what he does, and I can recommend him, you know. And then there's other different, another coach on there, Jane. She's a health and fitness coach with also a lot of knowledge around menopause. So that was an area that I felt she could do that I couldn't do, because I'm good at what I do, but I'm not good at everything, and nobody is, you know. And I think it's nice that people have those chances. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's worth going in and having a look at even the Meet Your Match column on the website, just to have a look through there and review that.
And, of course, that's on lifeview.co.nz.
Yeah.
Cool. We'll cover those more later on, folks, so people can check out and find a bit more about Marie and Life For You and everything that she offers. So, obviously, a bit of what you do is you're seeing, hey, there's a need here that's not being met. Is that kind of how you first got into it with the coaching, and as you are continuing along, looking for those gaps?
Yeah, it was a little bit like you touched on at the beginning there, Mike. You said that you'd been going to the doctors and going to counsellors for a few years and feeling rather despondent. It just didn't quite match what you needed.
Mm.
And that was something that I identified, especially when I was working with Rape Crisis. Some of the clients that got the 10 sessions ACC accredited post that experience seemed to cycle back. You know, it wasn't able to satisfy where they were at. You know, it wasn't filling that void. And I think at that point that was when I started asking other questions. Okay, so maybe I don't want to be a counsellor. Maybe I want something that can actually be almost something that's you can hold on to, something tangible that you have got the mental toolbox to be able to call on. So once you finish the course, and most courses are 6 to 8 weeks, depends how we go, whether we break it up to fortnightly or weekly. Personally, I think weekly is better, because it's just like, you know, going to school and you're learning the times table. You got to, you know, repetition is the mother of all success. And so the more it's you know, repeated, and the more we keep constant with each other, the better it works. It's not something you can do once a month, you know. Mm-hmm. It just isn't fulfilling enough. It doesn't imprint into that neural pathway enough. So I think that's probably the best take on that.
Yeah, because I think it is that continuity with learning as well, because I know through my own experiences, then all of a sudden I was opened up to new ideas and different ways of thinking. It led to different authors or creators and different concepts, and you follow those and they lead to new things. And so you start to hit in a whole pile of different direction, whereas, you know, as you say, it might be a course for a set time, but you do want some furtherness beyond that. And maybe sometimes with the counselling, it is looking at, hey, we're trying to deal with this particular trauma, and you haven't got those next steps, which is what probably more the coaching provides.
Yeah, absolutely. It is about finding what works for you. You might meet with me and we're not a match, and that's why the first session I do is always discounted, and it is to see, one, are we compatible? two, is this sound like something you would want to do, you know? Mm-hmm. And three, are you ready? Are you willing and are you able? Because you have to be those things. You need to show up. You can't sit there and go, oh, this doesn't work, you know?
Yeah.
So you have to be open-minded, not closed-minded.
I've heard that the guy who turns up and he's asked and like, how's everything? Yeah, it's all good. It's good. We go, well, that's the end of the session. We don't actually need you here. So it is a matter of being a bit of that vulnerable and being open to what's going on. Yeah. So who are going to be those people who are most suited to your style of coaching and your other coaches?
Gosh, the range, I personally coach from 15 onwards, my youngest client being 15 and the eldest one I coach was 86. And I coached her about 10 years ago and she's now living in rest home care and I still pop in and see her as a friend from time to time.
Nice.
But people in so many different places, you know, people in prisons, people in hospital beds, you know, people who are stuck in their homes because they have such chronic anxiety and phobias about getting out of the house, you know. I've met people in rest homes even, you know. So it's wherever you are at and whomever you are, if you want to bust out or break away from that stuckness, that hurt, where you get to a point, you know, it's kind of like if you sit on a rock, it's okay. You can wriggle around on it and you can handle it. It's uncomfortable, but I can do it. But boy, if that rock turns into a nail, you're like, I am not going to sit on this. You know,
I'd be a pain in the ass, wouldn't it?
It would. Perfect. I've reached the point of pain where I say no more.
Yeah,
and that's often when clients come in, when they have got to that breaking point. It's nice when some of them come in, like I've had people that work in Parliament even, and they come in and they're just literally wanting a space that is safe for downloading, you know. So everybody has such a different story.
There's possibly some politicians I could actually recommend from around the world who might be
may not be
could benefit from your insights. Could not be. So you've given some idea of who would be compatible and some of the background there. So what are some of the common themes coming through or the limiting beliefs that people are presenting that you see out there in our population?
I'm not worthy. I'm not good enough. I can't trust anybody. I can't trust this life. I don't trust myself. I don't have the confidence. I'm not lovable. I'm ugly. You know, I'm stuck. I have no future. Those are, and I mean, that's pretty heavy sentences right there, you know, that, and they are utterly destructive. The irony is that they're not true. They are false. They are a false belief that limits, that sets a brake on anything you would try and achieve. Because you might go, well, I'm sick of this. I hate this. I wish it wouldn't happen. It's not fair, those type of thoughts. And you're doing everything you can logically. You're setting the alarm clock on a Monday morning and saying, right, I'm going to start doing this from today onwards. But the thing is, if that mindset, if that plan in your mind is identical as it was beforehand, if you don't change the mechanism of that plan, it's going to go back. It's just going to, you know, you can do it for a while and then the energy will recede, the motivation recedes, and then you go, oh, to hell with it. This doesn't work. And you walk away despondent, probably feeling worse than ever, you know. And that's the difference between success and non-success, is that you have to be willing to change the mindset, the tools and techniques to go with the decision to change your life.
And it's going back to that rock. Rather than keep going back to that rock, you've got to keep pushing forward, find something new. Mm-hmm. So someone is feeling stuck, they are feeling uncertain. Where do they start?
They've got a limiting belief. Yeah, yeah.
Where do they start to move forward? How do they go about it?
Yeah, well, they accept it. Own it where you are. Like, this is how it is right now. Ownership is a huge part of it. Own it, admit it, then reach out, then ask for help, then, you know, set the wheels in motion. It often really saddens me how afraid a client is when they first come through the door. I assume they fear judgment. They fear that they're going to be growled at. I'm not sure what it is, but, you know, for me, the space is about holding that space very confidently for them, very secure and very, I try and be as loving and approachable as I possibly can with every client because, you know, I've been in that place where you feel so lost and so vulnerable and so hurting that you are afraid to tell the world for fear of it getting worse. And that's a terrible, terrible place to be in. And so I get it. I think having the empathy to understand that pain is so debilitating, whatever, wherever it comes from, it's so debilitating, whether it's mindset pain, heart pain, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I know it is very, very tough to walk through that fire and then knock on somebody else's door. Yet it is the only way. It is the only way to reach out and ask.
Because all the things we spoke about was, I'm not worthy, I lack self-confidence, they seem to be the judgments on ourselves. Mm. So is that kind of based around how we frame success and how we compare ourselves to other things, that we have all these expectations of how we're going to be? If I do this, I'm therefore successful. And if we're not meeting those, therefore we feel, hey, I'm not good enough. I lack confidence to do it. Any relationship there? I know I've had to redefine my, how I see success. It's less about external.
I think that's a great question, by the way. I think it starts off with self-image and right back to that young age, you know, when you are looking for, you know, if you look at the Maslow's hierarchy of needs and trust versus mistrust. So the first thing we do when we're born is we lean on a parent or an adult to feed us, to nurture us, to support us. So our basic fundamentals of actually knowing that we have a safe platform in which to live on. And that can be compromised in many ways, whether it's an unhealthy home or an unhealthy parental guidance or, you know, just that feeling of not being received in a full loving way where that parental love and nurturing doesn't come forward. And that drops our first seed. And then as we get into sort of primary school age, when we start to become more industrious, we start learning, well, if I do good, I get good in class, you know, or if I do good, I get seen, and that's how I can get a bit of praise. But again, if that isn't there for you, then you start going, well, I thought my teacher would say I was good at that, and they haven't. So my doubt is growing, and I didn't feel it when I was young, and I'm not feeling it now. So then we get into that teenage stage, and so we seek it. This void is growing. We're craving to be loved. We're craving to be seen. We're craving to be recognized. And often as a teenager, we will then look for it in a romantic sense and look for romantic love to fill that maternal or that childlike void, and it doesn't fit.
It's nearly having a dependent on something we don't have control over, and therefore we're likely to have gaps or feel inadequate because we need to learn to fill our own cup and praise ourselves. Is that
It's not about being selfish, and it's about being self-aware and knowing that the banter that you give yourself, your subconscious, that the way you speak to yourself, the way you treat yourself, the way you learn to say no to the things that aren't good for you and yes to the things that are, that's how you fill that void yourself. If it isn't filled by somebody else, it doesn't mean you can't refill it yourself.
So it's been a lot more conscious on the choices we make, and those choices, we need to have firm boundaries on which we base them.
And it's empowering. You know, it's a good feeling when you can walk into a space and be, I know who I am and I know where I am. You know?
And what about, like, you know, I've stopped watching the news. I'm sick of hearing the repeat politicians about the what's going on, the economy, the war, the conflict, there's accidents, there's crime, etc. How would you suggest for the general population we cope and process some of that information that is right in our hands and in our faces on a daily basis?
I always use a saying, do my ears need to hear this? Do my eyes need to see this? You know, and it's not saying, ostracize yourself from all things because you are part of the world, you are part of the community. But there is a fine line between letting it overwhelm you and letting it guide you, you know. So for me, laughter is the best medicine, and I would rather watch a comedy than watch the news any day. I mean, you can pick up enough on media news without watching it, you know. So self-protection is, again, about self-love. It's about, will this actually be of any great benefit to you watching it, you know, because if you're leaning on a certain chap that I think you're talking about, one particular chap with one governance there. I mean,
I think there's multiple at the moment.
There is.
I won't give any one guy all the credit.
Yeah. But it's also a form of self-harm.
Mm.
You know, if it's not going to be beneficial to you, if there's no way you can contribute to it, then just focus on being a kind person. Focus on putting the good out into the world, because I still believe there is plenty of good in the world as well.
Absolutely.
And be darned if I'm going to let that corrupt that.
And it's a bit, I guess, also about being mindful and present in our moment right here, right now. Well, whatever's going on around the world, if it's not affecting us right here and now, we can be aware of it. It's just a matter of how far we stick our nose into the rabbit hole.
That's it, yeah.
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 Okay, so we're aware of someone else who's struggling a bit. How can we step in to be a bit of support to someone then, if we can, we're trying to help them to see things differently?
Yeah. It's a double-pronged answer, really, but it depends, obviously, who it is. You know, are you okay has become a great, you know, statement around lately, and I really like it. The thing is, as you talked about before, often men, if you said, are you okay, they'd go, yeah, I'm fine, you know, and we brush it away. The one thing we never want to do is to offer the solution, because everybody perceives something in a very different way, and what you consider to be the solution may not be what their solution is. You can be strong in your own set of morals and values and guidance, and you can say, this is a consideration, but criticism is never going to work.
But like earlier, you were talking about trying on different pairs of shoes. The pair of shoes you got may not fit for this other person you're looking to support. They've got to be enlightened and find what, you know, whether a pair of jandals or work boots or whatever it is.
Yeah. So, you know, say if someone you care about, you know, they're an alcoholic, you can send them links to Alcoholic Anonymous, or you can suggest opportunities where they can get help. But, you know, whether you can actually sway that person is up to that person, because inevitably the answer must come from them. So sitting with them and just being there can often be enough. Silence can be enough. Companionship can be enough.
Because I think with the addiction too, it's not so much while you might want them to change being an alcoholic, there will be something sitting behind it which they are medicating, so to speak, is my understanding. And until that's sort of addressed, then you're unlikely to change that behaviour. Mm. Sort of moving on to that community aspect, you've touched on a bit about the Life for You team and some of the various people there. So if we just go back through your services, if we round up for the last 5 minutes. So you do your online, you do in person, you do Zoom calls.
Yeah, the Zooms have become, especially once COVID came along, that sort of really kicked off at that point. One of the things I like about the Zooms is that it doesn't matter where you are in the world. Obviously, I can't speak another language. And time barriers can be a little bit tricky if I've had clients in the States and things like that. So there's a bit of a time game there. But it's good because we have the choice whether we want to front up and actually have a face to face, which personally, like we talked about, I prefer.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not always possible. If somebody lives out in the sticks or in another country, or, you know, they're doing it on their lunch break, or they're in hospital or places like that, or if they've got, chronic anxieties and they may not be able to leave their space comfortably for a while. So the choices are there on how they can meet with me.
And even if they're uncomfortable, possibly speaking in that one-to-one situation, you have your online courses, like I think your personal liberation program was your first one out, and you got some others, professional development, level one and two, the full life circle, empowering teens, the art of release, and then you have your life of fitness review. So anything you want to touch on those? What might be somewhere for people to start, or is there?
Yeah. Well, the life of fitness one, what I call the LOF, it's a little bit like, what happens is once a client's finished doing the course, during the course we do something where they write a promise to themselves about what they want to have happen in the next year. And then I send them it, usually in the snail mail, and it is an opportunity to come back in and reset your goals for the next year. That has been really surprisingly successful. And for many reasons, one, it's a great way to keep in contact with people, but two, clients then feel a little bit accountable, you know, and they're like, oh, I want to achieve that this year before I get in front of Marie again, because I know she's going to say, yeah. You know, why haven't you done it? So it's a lovely way. And some of my clients, you know, that I've seen from, you know, years ago have this beautiful history of all their goals, and it's like a success manual in itself, because you see the progressions, and if things haven't worked out, then we can review that and go, okay, which, you know, what pathway shall we attempt at this time, you know? And it's very interactive, very supportive.
Yeah, because a lot of people, the goal setting, if they don't get it, it's kind of given up. But as you say, it's, hey, let's retweak it. We're moving forward. It's just time for a bit of a pivot there. So without naming any individuals, what are some of the major changes you've seen from your clients, or progress or success stories? Any particular that stand out you'd like to share?
Yeah. One of the 15-year-olds, she was struggling quite a bit. She's now a teacher in Japan. The lady that I said that I spoke about that I met up with, I actually did solve her issues. However, it was a little bit of a sticky one, around it. So that, I guess I don't want to say too much for privacy reasons, but I was asked to find her daughter. So I almost became a bit of a detective in that one.
Right.
And that's how different the storylines can be. I've helped people to reconcile relationships, when there's been, a few unhealthy goings on in it. I've helped people to become better at being estate agents, nurses, mechanics, you know, members of parliament. It's been a really, really interesting story. Young farmers and young, whether that's male and female, the storylines are just incredible. Yeah.
And I think it's really, you know, that's really worthwhile for people to hear, because, I mean, I think some people think, oh, I just need someone to talk to, I've got this going on, but it's such an array of things that it's about problem solving, providing options and finding a direction for people to move forward. Yeah. So we're running out of time, unfortunately. I think we've gone for ages. So if you are looking to find out more, the website for Marie and the Life For You team is at lifeforyou.co.nz. You can find them on Facebook, lifecoachmarie.marie. LinkedIn, you're also on there under Marie McManaway. Your email is marie@lifeforyou.co.nz. You've also got a phone number there, but I think best people go on to online to check it out. So we are going to round it off with one final question, the takeaway we can leave with everyone. So if there's one piece of advice you'd leave listeners with today, something they could reflect on, you know, what would it be? What would you like them to most have got out of this session to think about?
We've talked a lot about individual and about finding yourself. So I would say be yourself. You know, we've all got this innate individual ability about us. Every one of us has a strength or something that we're passionate or good about. And it's how do we deliver that into this world and make it into something that you can do on a regular basis. Change is a decision that you make in one moment. And in that one moment, you can completely change your life. And all it is about stepping into that process of change and actually owning it. So celebrate yourself, be kind to yourself, and be yourself, you know, be part of this world. It's a gift, own it and enjoy it.
Just to reflect on that, because I think sometimes we worry about the pain of change, and yet what is worse, the pain we sit with Or if actually we make change, it may not be pain. We never know that everything, how that might change and evolve for us. And I think some of the success stories say that. Yeah. I'd just like to finish off with a personal appreciation because I know the difference you added in my perspective, and it still lives today. I look at the way and I explore the world and things like that. So I can highly recommend for people to reach out to Marie. I'm sure she can enlighten you in many different ways you hadn't even considered. And part of that is reflection on how we are conditioned in society. So don't accept if you're not feeling in a good space and you know there's better out there for you. Marie is exactly the type of person. So it's been an absolute honour and privilege to have you on the show. And thanks you finishing off, starting off the new season for us here on Well, Well, Well. Looking at next time, we've got, hopefully we'll have Shane here from Employment Connections, but that's pretty much what we've got time for. And I'll just let Marie have the final word to say goodbye.
Thank you so much for having me, Mike. It's been a real privilege. And once we get talking, we could just carry on for hours. Anytime anybody would like me to come and share my little pieces, just feel free to do so. Knowledge, as they say, is only worthwhile if we unwrap it and share it with other people. So more than happy to share that. And thanks for listening.
Awesome.